And tell you that the meeting will come to order, and then we have a quorum.
I could see that.
All right.
I just wanted some inside information.
All right. Well, we were meeting till 10:45 at the residence last night, and you know, some progress is being made. I guess I'd encourage you to ask Majority Leader Pepin about it on the floor today if you have questions.
I'm sure somebody will, and I could probably name who that will be.
And it's not going to be me. I like a friendlier place.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask Representative Albright yesterday, and I didn't get recognized when he announced the agenda today.
You didn't get recognized?
Well, the speaker didn't see me.
Oh, okay. All right.
The Speaker Pro Tem, Davids, didn't see me.
Oh, all right. All right.
Wherever he went, I told him later.
He was focused on his sentences. He had to
but he announced two minor bills this morning, and I kind of knew what.
Small bills.
Small bills. Well, that might be true, then. Yeah.
Not
but I was going to tweak him a little bit about 20-some million being.
Oh, okay. All right.
Small or minor.
Well, like, you know,
I kind of had an idea what one of them would
compared
be.
Compared to his bill, I mean. But, all right. Well, members, we have the minutes of May 11th before us. Would someone like to move the minutes? Representative Erdahl moves the minutes of May 11th. Are there any corrections, additions, changes to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of the approval of the minutes of May 11th, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, we've got two bills before us today. Let me turn the chair over to Representative Albright, and I'll go present the first bill.
You want to be tempted?
Are they heading this way? Tony.
Representative Knobloch, did you want to move your bill before the committee?
Yes, members, I'll move that House File 839 be referred to the General Register, and I have a small amendment, the A1 amendment, that I'd like to move, so I'll move the A1 amendment, and basically, I guess if I could just get action on the A1 amendment to get the bill into the shape that I'd like it in. This bill originally was referred to the Ways and Means Committee, so it's not coming from elsewhere. All the A1 amendment does is, instead of saying February 28th in the bill, it basically makes it the last day of February for those years in which there is a February 29th.
Members, any discussion to the A1 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Amendment is adopted.
Okay, members, House Bill 839 is a bill that actually came to me some time ago from Senator Cohen. And what it does is briefly or minorly tweaks the forecast law so that right now the way the budget forecast is for the February forecast is that it has to be delivered to the legislature and governor by the end of February. But in a year like this year, you had a little bit of a odd circumstance where February 28th fell on the weekend, and February 6th was a Friday, and the first Friday of the month is when the national unemployment figures come out. And it's always a little bit of a rush job at the end to put together the budget forecast, and the national unemployment figures are an important factor to consider in putting together the forecast. And if you're in a situation like you were this last year where the national unemployment figures aren't available until February 6th and you've got the forecast due before the end of February and February 28th falls on a weekend, our state economist doesn't maybe have quite as much time as they normally would to put together the forecast. And so this, and of course this is the most important February, the most important forecast, this is what we use to set the budget. So this bill basically would just give our state economist a little bit more time to put the forecast together when you've got the last day of February falling on a weekend. it would allow the forecast to come out on the Tuesday after that weekend, so, you know, March 1st or 2nd. And that's the bill, members.
Members, any questions of the testifier on the bill? Hearing none, Mr. Chair, you will renew your motion to pass.
I'll amend my motion that House Bill 839, as amended, be referred to the General Register.
Members, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? House File 839, as amended, is adopted and re-referred to the General Register.
Thank you.
Who are good Republicans? Well, Joyce Pettis. What?
Not Rock.
Mr. Chairman, before we begin the next bill, I didn't really have a question, a direct question on the bill that we just passed out, but is this one that we might anticipate future amendments to in the last few days?
Well, it's funny you ask that, Representative Carlson. I guess I can always say that, you know, there's always the possibility of amendments on bills.
I kind of thought we might be potentially going for a little drive with this one. You know?
Well, there are no immediate plans, Representative Carlson, but certainly it would be something that would be available for amendments.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, being one that has stationed a few bills through the years and have used a couple of them through the years, I just thought I might ask that question.
Yeah, you understand the situation. Yep. All right, Representative Albright moves that House File 748 be referred to the General Register. And Representative Albright, I see you have the DE3 amendment. Would you like to move that?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the DE3 amendment, get the bill in the proper order to speak to the members on.
All right, Representative Albright moves the DE3 amendment, which is a delete-all amendment. Representative Albright, I guess, if members are okay to just put the delete all amendment on. Is there any discussion to the delete all amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the DE3 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The DE3 amendment is adopted. All right. Representative Albright, why don't you describe House File 748 as amended?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 748 is what has in years past been, and it is the same with this bill, the nonpartisan statewide disaster relief bill. It encompasses really the process that Representative Pawlowski actually put into place a few years ago under sections chapters 12A and 12B, and this is actually the first really burnishment of that, and what we've discovered by using that process as the counties have provided information to the disaster relief agencies, and they are here to testify. I think it would be helpful. I'll spend a few minutes just talking about the bill itself and the provisions, but that I think that a number of the committee members were not in the committees that it passed through, and given the statewide nature of the circumstances that are in the bill, I think it's helpful that we all hear from the agencies that would be providing the services that would be encompassed inside the bill. First and foremost, this is about the flood, but the rain event that started to occur on June 11th of 2014 and really encompassed the next 30 to 40 days. Based upon that rain event, sometime just after that, the governor declared a disaster that started out with 8 counties and culminated with 36 counties and 3 tribal reservations being included in that. That being said, both the DNR, FEMA were involved, DNR, Bowser, as well as the various agencies that would take care of the folks affected by this. It includes both the public sector as well as the soil, water, and conservation districts for mitigation of these circumstances. This has been a very slow process, members. This has been a process that has undertaken the better part of 11 months. And for some, that comes as a bit of a surprise. It does not and has not followed the normative process as we and you have become accustomed to with regard to following up from a disaster of a weather-related event such as occurred in southeastern Minnesota a number of years ago or in Duluth a few years short of this. And so it's been an instructive process for all the agencies as we've worked through the details to come up with the figures. Some would say that this bill has been the most fully vetted and scrubbed from the numbers perspective of any disaster bill in recent memory. But that being said, members, I think it's been instructive for the agencies themselves to work through the process that was enacted under 12A and 12B. And they will speak to that as well when I ask for their attendance at the table here. But I'd also like to thank Representative Pawlowski for the record. He and I have had some very substantive conversations over the last couple of days, and it was very instructive, I think, for me as well as for the agencies to hear from the author's perspective in terms of the intention for what 12A and 12B were intended to do in terms of providing a process so that we were not having to be called back in a special session on a what seems like a more and more recurring regular basis to address the issues of a disaster such as was the case in the summer of 2014. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I would like Director Kelly to make some presentation remarks about how the bill was prepared. And then I have two other presenters who would like to give their remarks in terms of how their portions of the bill were put together as well, Mr. Chair.
All right. If the testifiers could come forward, Representative Pawlowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to also talk about what happened in the last 24 hours. Representative Albright and I met in his office yesterday at 8:30 for well over an hour. Mr. Marks was part of that meeting, and we were going over what's before you today. Subsequently, then, yesterday afternoon at 3:45, for well over an hour and probably close to two, Representative Albright and I again met with the Senate author, and we met with all the agencies involved. And there's to say the bill's fully vetted, it is fully vetted. Disaster aid this session is going to be in two parts. And I think it has to be in two parts. This is the first time we've done a disaster without a special session. And it is new for everyone. It worked. It worked well. I think the numbers here reflect the fact that these are accurate and they fit within the confines, with one exception, for Chapter 12A and 12B. The other interesting part of this is that when we do something new that's this complicated, there were two events that had to occur. FEMA has changed dramatically since Katrina, and that change has caused problems with how we implement disaster aid in the United States and in Minnesota. But when we put this in place, we have two triggers now. One is a presidential declaration, one is a gubernatorial declaration. The old trigger used to be a special session. The new trigger is the declaration itself. Once the declaration is made by either the governor or the president, that then begins a process that is outlined in 12A and 12B. And there was some confusion, I think, with not just the agencies, but with the local units of government and how that was to take place, and that reflected in, I think, the delay of this bill. So I want to thank Representative Albright, too. We spent a lot of time on this over the last 24 hours, and the agencies, and I think it is instructive to hear from the agencies how complex this is and how difficult it is to arrive at these numbers when you're working particularly with FEMA, and FEMA is in delay or denial through a good part of the process until it finally reaches a number that we can use. So with that, I want to thank Representative Albright, too, for all the work he's put into this for the last 24 hours.
Well, thank you, Representative Pawlowski, for your work on this, too. I know you've done a lot of work in this area over the years. Mr. Kelly, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, members, good morning. My name is Joe Kelly. I am the Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management with the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. Representative Albright kind of laid out a reminder of the history of this disaster, which began last June, and Representative Pawlowski gave a very good description of the general process that we follow to help Minnesota communities recover. And in this case, recovery from this flood event began last July, and we continue to work with our communities through the fall. And as members will recall, with the passage of House File 164 at the beginning of the session, that was to replenish the disaster contingency account from its original $3 million appropriation, which we had spent essentially by the end of Christmas. And that money is appropriated for the FEMA match, the non-federal share of the public assistance, FEMA public assistance disaster program. The FEMA match for this particular disaster is probably now right around in the neighborhood of about $13 million, and that was why that was necessary for that appropriation to refill that account at the beginning of this session. This bill serves to fund what I guess I would categorically call the unmet needs, those things that aren't covered by FEMA programs, that are expenses borne by the counties and the townships and the cities that are not covered for assistance by FEMA or our state program in Chapter 12B. Categorically or primarily, those show up in two ways. One are mitigation projects that are done to make sure that the damage, if a similar event were to take place, the damage would either not occur or not be as significant. Oftentimes, when we are when the communities are repairing infrastructure, that's an ideal time to improve it so that it is more resilient from future events. So mitigation is one general category, and the other are just for repairs that for whatever reason FEMA finds ineligible. As Representative Pawlowski says, the process begins now with the declaration. And even the declaration process was somewhat challenging for us this time, because we had an initial declaration and then three more amendments, so essentially four different increments of the President's declaration of a major disaster here in Minnesota. The process we go through to qualify for those declarations is what we refer to as the preliminary damage assessment. That normally takes us, depending on the scope of the disaster, a week or two. This one took upwards of 2 months to complete. Representative Pawlowski alluded to some of the challenges that we had working with FEMA on this particular event. But when we go, when a county is designated in a disaster declaration, my staff goes to that county. They hold a meeting. We call them applicant briefings, where those qualified local units of government who think they have a claim or want to file for federal disaster assistance go to these meetings and understand the process. They receive an application. They are briefed on how this is going to go. And for the purposes of today's hearing and this bill, they're also told what to do as they go through that process. If they come upon one of their projects, one of their needs that is not going to be satisfied by the FEMA programs, and that's how we capture, if you will, those requirements, and then we vet them through a body called the Minnesota Recovers Task Force, which is made up of the state agencies that can provide services and support to help communities recover from disasters. That Recovers Task Force met almost immediately. In fact, before we had a declaration, and met several times through the summer and into the fall and later on into the winter. As Representative Albright and Representative Pawlowski both said, this is the first time we have done this in coordination with the disaster contingency account. It was a challenging disaster, one, because the scope of it, from Lake of the Woods to Rock County over to Scott County and all 30-some other counties in between. It was challenging because of the protracted amount of time that it took to get a full disaster declaration from the federal government. I think it's safe to say it was a little confusing for a number of parties involved as we went through this process for the first time. And anything that takes a long time, that lengthening of a process just adds to the challenges that we've met. Regardless, I do agree that of the disasters in recent history, for a supplemental appropriation, these projects have been probably as vetted, as studied, as compared to the requirements of the statute of any that we have experienced. To be clear, there is no appropriation for the Department of Public Safety in this bill, but we are the overall managers of the state's disaster response and recovery operations, and the representatives from state agencies that have been approached by local communities for help and assistance who have been asked to try to help with the unmet needs are here today to answer the questions about the specific projects. But Mr. Chair and members, I certainly stand for questions you might have about the process and how we got to today.
Okay, questions. Representative Wagenius.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate where we are now, and that feels okay. But going forward, I'm thinking about in the future. Do you, and I can't tell from this bill, do you have enough money in the pot if there was a tornado this summer sometime? That's my first question. I have two.
Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, as of this morning, we do not. All of the money that was in the initial appropriation and then in the deficiency bill at the beginning of the session, all that money is spoken for. Earmarked, if you will, lined up for communities that are recovering from this disaster. If there were a new disaster today, we would not have the funds available for either a state disaster declaration or the FEMA match.
And I guess, Representative Wagenius, I could maybe fill you in on a little bit more of that. You know, there is money in each of the three budgets for additional funds that have been proposed for the contingency account. We were just discussing this yesterday. The Senate has $1 million in their public safety bill for it. The House has $2.5 million. The governor's recommended $11 million. So I don't know where they're going to settle, but I would anticipate there will be, you know, some additional money once we have a bill. Representative Wagenius and then Pawlowski.
Well, I'm glad to hear that there is money on the table. I mean, tornadoes are something we can't anticipate, but they do happen, and they can be pretty miserable here. But on the other side, while we can't anticipate a tornado, big rain events are our future. I mean, the university folks, Dr. Seeley has testified to that again and again. So what is our plan for, because we know there's going to be flooding, we know where it's going to be. What are our prevention plans?
Mr. Kelly, or Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wagenius. I think that, you know, as the folks around the table yesterday afternoon really spelled out, this was instructive in a number of regards, and to your point, Representative Wagenius, I think the coordination of the various agencies was one that was highlighted as we talked about the table in terms of making sure that there's a quarterback, and whether that, if that's Director Kelly or some other agency, I think it was instructive that as we shared around the table that there wasn't someone or some entity that was really quarterbacking the overall scope of the project that was known to everyone, and I think Representative Pawlowski and I shared that would be a strong desire on our part going into the summer months, is to look at both 12A and 12B and see how we can refine those chapters to make sure that in future disasters that there is an identifiable, even more exacting process known to the folks that would be affected, and how that information flows to the people that would be able to put it together.
Representative Wagenius.
Oh, thank you. Actually, I'm glad for that response, and I'm glad you're thinking that way, but that's not exactly my question. My question is more, we know where floods are going to occur. We know, we have a good idea of what lands they are going to be on. So I see here in this bill, we have some money for easements, perpetual easements. That's good. But what about some of the lands that we know and our agencies know this is going to happen? It is going to happen. That's where I feel like we're... Do we have plans there? Let me just, without prejudicing it, do we have plans to, for Mr. Kelly or somebody else, to come back and say, these are the prevention things we should be doing for the next flood?
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, to your question, I think Mr. Keene from Bowser or from the DNR, I think, probably would have a more articulate answer in terms of the planning that is either planned for in the bill as a contingency for identifying, as you well know, the land that, you know, probably is known to repeatedly flood, and what to do about it to prevent it or to recognize that it is going to happen in that same area again. So I would defer answering that question and having one of those gentlemen respond to your question.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, do we want one of those gentlemen to come down?
Mr. Lacosmo was here as well. I think he might.
Okay, why don't we have Mr. Lacosmo coming down? And Representative Pawlowski, I don't know if you had a comment to something I want to recognize.
Mr.
You.
Mr. Chair, my question is to Mr. Kelly, and it's a rather complicated one on the $11 million.
All right, well, let's wait for Mr. Lacosmo, and then we'll get Mr. Kelly back. Mr. Lacosmo, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Kent Lacosmo with the Department of Natural Resources. And Representative Wiginius, to answer your question, we are doing mitigation around the state. Basically, the main types of mitigation that we've done are to vacate the floodplain by acquiring flood-prone properties and removing them so they aren't there and you have the floodplain natural. And we are constructing structural protection projects, also levees and pumping stations. The levees are constructed to the 100-year elevation plus 3 feet. We are using the new hydrology that I think we've spoken about in the past, that that's been updated. It's the new Atlas 14 is a technical document that looks at precipitation patterns, and that's adjusted to reflect the higher types of events that we're seeing now compared to the old TP40 was the previous document that was very old. And the other thing that's being done is that FEMA is in the process of revising the floodplain maps to reflect a more accurate floodplain, and generally those areas are increasing in size, so it's identifying a wider floodplain area that people should be concerned about.
Representative Wiginius.
Well, that's very general. I mean, I think we need to understand, what's the size of the problem? Is it this big, or is it this big? And what's our plan to get to this big, whatever size it is? I mean, do we have a specific planned out and a timeline for getting the job done?
Mr. Lacosmo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wiginius, perhaps the area that's the furthest ahead in that is the Red River Valley, that's done significant studies on the scope of the problem. And there, as I think this committee knows, that we've spent a significant amount of money in the Red River Valley doing structural projects and also doing the impoundment projects to reduce the size of future events. So that's been done. How we've approached the flood hazard mitigation program has been to look at the repetitive loss communities in the state and do protection projects there. And, you know, unfortunately, over the last decade, most of those have been impacted by a disaster and a significant flood event. But the most impacted areas by flooding in the past, we now have protection. East Grand Forks, Warren, Roseau, Moorhead are all well protected through that hazard mitigation program.
Representative Wiginius.
Well, I think we all know that the Red River Valley we've spent enormous amounts of money there. But where we've had some real disasters is when we've toured in southern Minnesota, in the Austin area for one, gone through some of those towns where we were seeing high water marks that, well, you know the story, but I don't sense that we have the same planning, prevention in some of these communities in southern Minnesota that we have in Red River Valley. It feels like we've treated one area totally different from the other.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wagenius. This may not go to answering the question that you're posing, but I think it's instructive that Representative Lanning, when he was a part of this body a number of years ago, actually put forward legislation that put together a regional watershed district for the Red River Basin. He and I have actually had conversations in the last couple of weeks talking about legislation that would afford and promote those type of regional watershed districts. I think there are 9 over the course of the whole state. And to your point about that planning, you know, identification of the repetitive nature of some of these disaster events or the rain events, I think to some extent those types of bodies, to the extent that they're enacted, would go to addressing that question, because we're dealing with acts of nature, acts that, you know, are unplanned. And so to plan for them, I think, is that's the question that everyone asks. And how do we address it? So I don't know that we're entirely attributing a good answer for the question posed, but I think there are solutions pending or in the works that we'd like to address that question more forthrightly about. So I hope that satisfies your appetite for the question.
Well, the watershed approach is a good one, but it does seem to me we're not very far along, and that's the issue, because we're not doing the prevention we need to do, is my observation.
Mr. Lacasmo?
Mr. Chairman, and if I may expand a little bit more, as part of the emergency management process, all the counties are required to do all hazard mitigation plans, so they are looking forward at what types of disasters they may encounter, both flood and potentially tornadoes or other significant events. And we have done significant projects in Rushford, in Austin, Zumbro Falls, you know, along the Minnesota River. There have been significant projects. So we are making progress, and there are plans to avoid the future events. You know, in the history of Minnesota, what happened is the state developed along rivers because that was the means of transportation and of water supply. And we built a lot of stuff where we shouldn't have. But since 1969 with the floodplain program, we've obviously are building out of the floodplains, or at least taking that into account. And with the new regulations and the new maps, that's being a little bit higher level of protection.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it might be also instructive just to hear from the Bowser as well. And we have Mr. Keene with us this morning, and he might be able to shed a little light on this process as well for the bill and possibly to Representative Wagenius's question from a theme as well.
All right. Well, briefly, because I think that we've got session at 10 o'clock, and I also want to get to Representative Pawlowski's question. Sir, can you state your name for the record and give us your testimony?
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Al Kane. I serve as Chief Engineer for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. I will just add to this conversation, Representative Wagenius, that within Chapter 12A, Bowser has an authority to use the Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve Program for conservation easements. And we have, after floods, acquired conservation easements on many floodplain lands that were damaged, and therefore there's a desire to take them out of agricultural production, put them into perennial vegetation. So it's another piece of the puzzle in terms of how we try to mitigate future damage.
All right. We can have perhaps Mr. Kelly come back, and I know Representative Pawlowski's got at least one question for him.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like Mr. Kelly to explain why $11 million needs to be put into that disaster contingency account. And then I have one explanation after that.
Sure. Mr. Kelly, welcome back. Can you give us a response to Representative Pawlowski's question?
Mr. Chair and members, certainly. The $11 million projection is based on a study of our state's experience over the last 10 to 20 years, depending on which piece of the equation that we're talking at. But over an extended period of time, we looked at the amount of money that was appropriated and spent, one, for FEMA declared disasters for the FEMA match, and then other appropriations that were made by the legislature essentially to serve as a proxy for the new state disaster assistance program. And by that I mean in past years when there wasn't a state disaster program like we have now through Chapter 12B, the legislature would make, you know, one-time special targeted appropriations to assist communities that had been impacted by disasters. So studying those numbers over the last 10 to 20 years, as well as making our good faith estimate as to what the new state disaster assistance program would cost, we've arrived at the figure of $11 million.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, it's instructive to listen to what's going on with the $11 million. We had asked for $8 million in 2014. That was reduced to less than $4 million. We had built into the bill that we could use money that was unexpended from previous disasters, and that really has got us through to where we are today. But now we're working with real hard numbers. There should be no over-expenditures in the bills going forward. So it is critical that that fund be replenished. It be replenished at the amount that will cover when we are not in session. We don't prevent a special session. We have an option not to have one. And I think that option should be available as long as we are not in session. We also have, Mr. Chair, another type of disaster before us. There was a gubernatorial disaster declaration during this session. I don't want to discuss the complexity of that one, but that's a whole new type of disaster that's before the state. So, Mr. Chair, I would hope that as you're negotiating, that $1 million isn't enough in the disaster contingency account. Neither is the amount in the Senate. $11 million would be the amount that we're going to need to move forward.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Representative Pawlowski, because I wanted to follow up with a question from Mr. Kelly on it, too. And I guess I should mention it's $2.5 million that's in the House position. So the House position is actually higher than the Senate, although far below the governor. Mr. Kelly, I guess the question I wanted to ask on this is, you know, typically when you have a disaster, I mean, at least the history of what we dealt with here in the last year with the floods, and Representative Pawlowski has got far more experience with me on this, or far more experience than I do on this, but it seems like you have some initial expenditures that you need to spend to deal with some immediate issues, and then there's a fair amount of research and engineering and stuff that goes into determining how to spend the other monies that need to be spent to, say, restore the roads and other things which take place perhaps a year or two later. And I guess when you talk about your estimate of needing $11 million, is that contemplating that you believe that we have an average need of $11 million, or is it a case where we could get by with less money to deal with the immediate needs that normally need to be dealt with right after a disaster, but that the legislature could come back and appropriate the rest of the money, because typically the rest of the money, the majority, isn't spent until a considerable time later after other engineering work and such has been done.
Mr. Chair and members, if I understand the question correctly, there are some upfront costs, and we call them emergency work. There are the things that the communities do at the onset of a disaster, debris clearance, and the costs of responding to the event. The follow-on are what we call permanent work, all the engineering and the reconstruction of the infrastructure that was damaged in the event. I think what's important to remember is that both the FEMA program and the state companion program are reimbursement programs. The costs of these events, the responses and the recoveries are borne by the local communities in real time as they happen and as they need to expend that money in order to reconstruct infrastructure and try to get their communities back to normal. I think that timeline is different than the program administration timeline. One of the things that we believe that Chapter 12B worked very well this time, having that money and being able to immediately start reimbursing communities for the money that they had spent, is that we were able to reimburse those communities much faster than we have ever been able to in the past. And unfortunately, as has been mentioned, we ran out of money after at the end of the year, at the beginning of the session.
Okay, Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, to your point, the work in 12B in particular and the recommendation for the creation of a disaster contingency account came in the 2012 report by the legislative auditor. So these weren't things that were concocted by legislators. These were things that were concocted by the legislative auditor that said you need to have it because these disasters, as Representative Reganius has pointed out, are ongoing. They're not going away, and they happen in places and to the extent we can't even anticipate. No one would have anticipated Duluth or what happened last summer. We don't know what's in front of us, and the disaster that we're dealing with right now, totally unanticipated. So it is a document that primarily is the work of the legislative auditor and 13 agencies. They're the ones that have built Chapter 12A and 12B, and it's working, and it's working well. But we have to ensure that the resources are there.
Well, I guess my question is, maybe I missed the answer to this, but when you chose $11 million as a number, is that based on, say, what the average year's worth of disaster expense would be, Mr. Kelly?
Mr. Chair and members, that is essentially a cash flow number. The average amount of money that our agency processes, if you will, and reimburses local communities in a year. For example, this is a $50+ million disaster. We're not going to pay that all out at one time. These disasters take, you know, the reimbursement process and the engineering takes part over, in some cases, a period of years. That is a cash flow number, Mr. Chair.
All right. And so I guess that was the question I was getting to, is that, you know, given the legislature is meeting every year and given this is a reimbursement program and it takes some time for this money to be spent, is it the case that you do need $11 million? And granted, there could be a disaster that comes along at any time that's $50 million that far overwhelms even the $11 million if we chose that. But I guess my question is, you know, do you need $11 million or is a smaller number enough to handle the immediate issues, recognizing the legislature is going to be coming within a year and appropriating money to deal with reimbursing the other costs that primarily local governments have borne?
Mr. Chair and members, without commenting on the legislature's prerogative, that is the amount of money that we distribute in a year, so okay. on average.
All right, well,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Pawlowski.
Just a clarification here. We're trying to create a system where we have the option not to have a special session. If there is no money in the account, there will be a special session. There will have to be an appropriation. So the goal of this is to say, in some situations, because they have been repetitive, we don't need to have certain special sessions. The scope of a special session and the number you just mentioned would probably have to be a special session, but that's up to the governor and the legislature in consultation with the governor. So the $11 million is there to say the option will be available not to have a special session given the average of the disasters that have happened previously in Minnesota, basically back to 07.
All right, and I guess I was just trying to understand. I certainly think that there needs to be money put in the account. I was just trying to get a sense of whether $11 million was the right number or if that's what the state spends in an average year, and given that the legislature is here every year, if there was if a number of half that size, let's say, would do, or some other number. I was just trying to get a sense of it. That's all.
Representative Blau. There will still be a bill before the legislature to spend for the total amount of the disaster. All this does is set up a system where we can move immediately forward with these communities and begin repairs without a special session. There will still be a bill before us for the totality of the damage that was done in the repairs.
Yep. And again, I certainly think that we need to put some money into the account. I was just trying to get a sense of where the $11 million number came from. So, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wonder, Representative Pawlowski, do you recall there was sort of a general estimate at one time of the cost of a special session? Just maybe you recall that, or maybe somebody else does, just to sort of we can put this in perspective about how much money we're essentially wasting if we call special sessions when we could have avoided doing so.
Mr. Chair, my recommendation was around $35,000 to $50,000, depending on the length of the special session, if it's a day or more, somewhere in that ballpark.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Kahn.
I would like to know why this couldn't be considered part of the budget reserve. I mean, having this separate appropriation and the availability, but then when we compute the budget reserve, add this to the budget reserve amount, because it is essentially functioning like a budget reserve.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, the recommendation was to make this a standing appropriation ongoing so that we wouldn't have this discussion every year. Mm-hmm. That did not occur in 2014, and frankly, I'm blaming Senator Cohen, if he's listening, because of that.
So. All right. Well, Representative Carlson, did you have a question?
No, I'm
all right.
Watching the clock.
All right. Okay, members, I do have a small technical amendment that Mr. Sullivan has sent my way. The chair will move that on page 3, after line 24, insert the words, quote, amend the title accordingly, because there are some title issues that weren't covered by the delete all amendment. Let's see. With that, any discussion to that oral amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of adopting the oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The oral amendment is adopted. Members, any other discussion to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Albright renews his motion that House File 748 as amended be referred to the General Register. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 748 as amended is referred to the General Register. And members, really quickly before we go here, I just want to recognize a few people. This may be our last meeting of the year. I'm not sure we're going to have any other meetings before session starts. I do want to thank our pages. They're still around here, Kevin and Steve, for all the work that they did. I want to thank our staff, Mr. Sullivan, Mr. Marks, Mr. Stone, and Ms. Kotterick, who has kept us faithfully supplied with food all these meetings. Thank you, Representative Albright, for being vice chair. Thank you, Representative Carlson, for being lead. Not sure, again, if we're going to have another meeting in the next week or not. Thank you also, Mr. Glahn, Bill, wherever you are. And Mr. Sullivan over there, too. Yes, thank you. And with that, members, again, thanks, everyone. We will certainly be having other meetings. I'm not sure if we'll have any in the next 4 or 5 days or not, but the meeting's adjourned.